Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. This Saturday marks the 30th anniversary of the collapse of the Berlin Wall. The destruction of the wall marked a key turning point in the U.S. Cold War and was an event followed around the globe. By the way, do you remember where you were? I do. A piece of that history is right here in Miami. Now, you'll find a segment of the wall covered in its original graffiti at Miami-Dade College Wolfson campus. Tomorrow, the college will honor the 30th anniversary with special events throughout the day. Students at MDC developed a virtual reality Berlin Wall app that allows viewers to see what the original wall looked like. And in the evening, the college opening of the exhibition, From the Peaceful Revolution to German Unification. Andreas Spiegel is the German consul based here in Miami. Spiegel grew up in West Berlin, just a half mile from the wall. And we spoke with him about the significance of the wall and how Miami got a piece of it. My understanding is you lived half a mile from the Berlin Wall while the city was still separated. Where were you exactly?
Well, that I lived in my parents' house, which is indeed was about a half mile from the wall. We could see the wall at night. It was illuminated from my kitchen window. I could see the wall. And I do remember actually the time before the wall was built, because I'm a little older than that. And I went with my grandfather to get some coal and firewood at a place which then was East Germany or East Berlin. And then when the wall was up, obviously that was no more possible, so we had to go to another place. So in my children's memory, I still have that a very present memory, what difference it did make that the wall was there.
Remind us of the tension that existed between the two sides when the wall was up.
Well, the tension was there, had been building up during the times of the Cold War when almost 3 million people from East Germany had actually migrated towards the West to find more economic well-being and so on. That meant at the time almost 20% of the population had left. And that was one of the main reasons why the East German government and the Russian, the Soviet Union at the time, had this idea of protecting themselves against the brain drain and to build up a wall.
The moment that it finally comes down, it finally came down, where were you?
When it came down, I was actually celebrating my first foreign posting as a diplomat. I was in Bonn, the then capital, and I had my sort of cocktail party to say bye-bye. And actually, my first assignment was in Boston in the U.S., so when the news sort of came through that something was happening in Berlin, unfortunately the party didn't last very long. Everyone went home to see what happened. And it was a very curious dynamics in that evening because actually it's German unification and the fall of the wall is due to an accident actually by the speaker, the then speaker of the Politburo, who simply didn't read what he was supposed to say during a press conference. He just read the front page and not the back page. And that meant that he, when he was asked whether new travel regulations, when they would be in effect, go into effect, he said, well, as far as I can see, now, right now, immediately. And that's why so many people right now immediately went to the border control stations and asked the officials there to let them pass through the West. And it was, also transmitted by West German media, and East Germans did watch West German media. So it's like today with Facebook almost, that it spread immediately.
It went viral.
Yes.
When they were taking the wall down, what was the process? I mean, they just started in one place, started breaking it down, or was it just everywhere people were just starting to break it down?
Well, just immediately following this opening, that is on the 9th of November 1989, and the 10th of November, people tried to sizzle and to hammer a little bit of small piece and to keep a souvenir and so on. But the official dismantling only began weeks later. Because For a couple of weeks, it was a state of uncertainty of what would actually happen in the follow-up. And actually, the most symbolic opening was the opening of the Brandenburg Gate, you know, the big symbol of Berlin, in just before Christmas, 1989. So that was when really the official dismantling process started, and it lasted actually until 1991. So it was because it was a wall which covered an area of, I would say, well, 150 kilometers or so.
So you were working, as you said, in Boston with the German consulate there. This was in the 1990s.
Yes.
And I wondered, what were the steps in getting a piece? Because you got a piece of the wall to mm-hmm. Boston. What,
yes.
What did you have to do to get that to happen?
Well, actually, as this was an event which was given coverage worldwide, people were extremely interested. And because of the famous speech of John F. Kennedy in 1963, when he came to speak to about 400,000 people in front of the City Hall in Schöneberg with the famous phrase, "Ich bin ein Berliner," I am a Berliner, which was a very important emotional support for the Berliners at that time. And we had a request from the Kennedy Library in Boston to get a chunk of the wall. And then we did the liaison with German and Berlin administration to make that possible.
And as you've said, many pieces are all around the world. It was 5 years ago that pieces of that wall made their way to Miami. Why was Miami selected as one of the sites for something so historic?
Well, I think it's just, as always, it's due to personal initiatives of people who are interested. And in that case, I think Miami-Dade College, on the one hand, our then Consul General, were the key persons that actually arranged for that. And, knowing that, as we said before, that many other pieces were distributed in other parts of the United States. And why not Miami with a strong German population here?
So people have probably seen it, not known. Many people don't realize. It is at the Miami-Dade College Wolfsonian campus. How would you describe the pieces that are there?
Well, it's actually, it's like it used to be in the late 1980s when the wall was painted also from the western side, at least, where with graffiti and so on. So that actually became popular after unification. And there's still an exhibit of, let's say, half a mile of pieces of the wall, which is called the East Side Gallery, which still gives you a lot of examples of what kind of graffiti and what kind of motives, and very artistic sometimes are portrayed there. And the idea was simply to have one original, authentic piece put here with a little bit of a documentation around it to understand the background, how it came up, how it came down.
And there's, my understanding, a second site for pieces in Miami? It's not just that one.
Well, there's a, as far as I know, I haven't been there yet. There's a private initiative which actually brought two more pieces to Miami, the northern northern area, yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Andreas Siegel. He's the Consul General of the Republic of Germany based here in Miami. This year marks the 30th anniversary of the collapse of the Berlin Wall. Multiple pieces of the Berlin Wall are on public display in Miami, and you can see photos and find more information on our social media at WLRN Sundial. You know, we reflect on this critical time in Germany's history. It's interesting to note some of the parallels between the key political issues facing the country and the experiences we have here in South Florida. Describe the waves of immigration Germany experienced throughout the 20th century and how that compares to what we have always known and experienced here.
In Germany, we had a particular wave of refugees right after the Second World War. We had about 12 to 14 million, I believe, refugees coming from the formerly German territories east, that is now Poland and Russia, even the Kaliningrad area. they had to be integrated into the post-war society, which was sort of a difficult task. Then we had this East-West confrontation with the Warsaw Pact, NATO built up, and so on. And so that meant that many people in the East, in particular in East Germany, tried to get a better future in the West. And even before the building of the Berlin Wall, I think I mentioned it just earlier, we had about more than 3 million people from the GDR migrating towards the West.
What was the attitude, the general attitude of Germans when you talk about these migrations? How did they respond to that?
Well, in general, I think there was a very positive and responsible attitude, seeing the necessity to integrate these people who were often also linked through family ties and friends. So it's sort of a different type of migration than if you have totally different ethnic or religious groups coming.
Because, I mean, it parallels what we've seen in this country, you know, over many years, you know, having that influx of immigrants from Latin America and a lot of refugees. And, I mean, you know, we've had different policies and depends on who's president. But, I mean, is there something that we can learn from that experience that Germany just underwent?
The fact is, if you look back in history, everyone somewhere sometimes has been a migrant. If you look at the United States, it's one of the most typical migrant countries. Almost 20% of the U.S. population is German, of German descent, by the way, although that dates back a little bit further. Just to give you an example, I was stationed once in Malawi, southeastern Africa, just after the Mozambican civil war. Malawian population at that time was 10 million people. They had 2.5 million refugees from Mozambique in their country, administered by UNHCR, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, in big camps going up to 200,000 people in one camp. But curiously enough, although that is an influx of 25% plus of your own population in a poor country, they managed to deal with that. And I think from a humanitarian point of view, that I think is an example we should have in mind when we are talking about migrants coming in today.
How are you going to remember and reflect on the 30 years since the collapse of the Berlin Wall when we get to the anniversary?
It's a very important event to remember, not only for Germany, but also in terms of German-American relations, because in our family, people talked also very much about the Berlin airlift in 1948-49. There was this blockade decided by the Soviets of all water and land access to West Berlin at the time. So all the food, all the fuel, etc., had to be transported by air. And that certainly has paved the way for the Berlin that we have today. And as a matter of fact, I wouldn't be here today probably if that hadn't happened.
That was Andreas Spiegel, the German consul based in Miami. This Saturday marks the 30th anniversary of the collapse of the Berlin Wall. And tomorrow at Miami-Dade College, there will be a series of events honoring the anniversary, including a virtual reality app developed by students. And you can find more information later today at WLRN.org. Also, share with us on social media, where were you when the Berlin Wall collapsed? What did the event mean to you? Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Would love to hear your stories. Well, that is Sundial for this Wednesday, November 6th. Sundial is produced by Chris Remington and Alejandra Martinez. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontaro is our digital director. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. WLRN's program director is Jason Zapka, and our technical supervisor, the man pushing the buttons, Peter J. Mertz. Our theme music, by the way, is from the Miami Afro-Cuban funk band Palo. Find them online, gopalo.com. And always remember that this program is also a podcast. In case you want to listen on your own time, find WLRN Sundial on your podcast app. Well, coming up tomorrow on the show, tomorrow on the show, Miami City Commissioner Ken Russell will join us after his victory in District 2. We're going to discuss his priorities for the coming year and his plans to address the affordable housing crisis in the city. The Girl Scouts of Tropical Florida is celebrating its 97th anniversary with a special annual leadership luncheon next week. The CEO of the organization and a Girl Scout join us tomorrow to explain how that organization is continuing to attract girls and what's new with the group. And an exhibition in Coral Gables by young children from Guatemalan Mayan Center in Lake Worth. We'll hear from some of their stories and understand how the exhibition came together. Some fascinating work. By the way, don't forget, we got a book club. Find us on Facebook. Join us. Look up Sundial Book Club. We are reading Everything Inside by Edwige Dontakot for the month of November. If you have a question, by the way, for Edwige, email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org, or post your question on the Facebook group. We're going to be talking with her this week for a future air date. We'd love to share your questions with her. That's the program for today. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.